Hello, welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. This is episode 113 for December 20th, 2007, last show of the year. Our special guest today, Ed Fries, the CEO of Figureprints. Hey everyone, this is Norm the Intern. I'm hosting today's episode. With me is DJ Stapleton.
Hi, or Dan, whatever.
Dan Stapleton, fine. Our podcast producer, Jeremy Williams.
Has apparently gone to take a leak or something.
Apparently not there.
Wait for it.
Are you trying
I'm
to fart?
I'm Mr. T and I'm a Night Elf Moho!
That wasn't worth waiting for.
No, not at all.
It took too long, I'm sorry.
If and you got it right off the bat, it would have been good.
And our ex-Backspace columnist, Gary Widow.
Hello.
All right, it's a small group today. Everyone's off on the holidays or busy working on the issue, but we're still here, and that's what matters. The big news this week, obviously, Duke not dead. Duke Nukem Forever made an appearance online. Shaq News got the exclusive video teaser. Just released yesterday. Did you guys all watch it?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Now, can we say, like, conclusively that this is evidence that he's not dead? I mean, because there have been trailers before. There have been lots of trailers.
This
sure,
is the
I mean,
trailer in many years, though.
It is. The last time there was 3D Realms released any trailer was in 2001, and that was when the game was still based on the, I think, Unreal Tournament engine. But I mean, there have been hints that the game has been in development this whole past year. I mean, I think on the 3D Realms job listings, they had thumbnail, small miniature thumbnail images of Duke, and I think a pig cop earlier this year. And when we did our cover story of Prey, I know whoever did the story got a chance to take a look at Duke.
I know Dan Morris saw it when he visited the 3D Realms studios a couple of years ago. So yeah. I mean, of course they've always been working on it. I'm just saying, you know, is this really any indication that it's any closer to actually coming out than it was last time there was a trailer?
I would say it looks farther from coming out. If you compare this trailer to the one we saw 6 years ago, there was so much more in that last one. It was almost like the world was complete. It looked almost ready to go. If you look at this one, it's like you can't even make out any background detail. It's like they haven't even done the environments yet. It's just three or four character or enemy animations, no HUD, no weapons, no gameplay. It's kind of scary.
Well,
wasn't there actually an indication of a release date? Oh, no, I mean, not a date, but didn't they say, like, coming 2008 or something?
They said tune in for more, or stay tuned or something. I mean, George, the president of 3D Realms, right, he said this is definitely just a teaser, and it's not something that they planned on releasing. It's just some guys pieced it together for their holiday party, and they were so happy with it that they just wanted to show you know, the fans that you know, it's the end of 2007, because I guess all the Vaporware awards come out at the end of the year, so it's give everyone, you know, because they obviously know the game's been delayed for like 10 years now.
So wait a minute, were they going for the Vaporware award?
I think
there?
It was I think they were poking fun at themselves and also just reminding people that Duke still exists. Obviously, to build up for when they do have a big reveal and unveil the game. I mean, yeah, from the footage that we saw like some monsters, some I think we did see a pig cop, and obviously Duke. How did you think it looked, just from a graphical perspective?
It's really hard to say, because the stuff that was Duke wasn't in game. You know, that was all pre-rendered.
Well, how do you know? How do you know it wasn't in game?
No, I think that was in game.
Yeah.
I mean, very low poly. You could see the kind of shimmer that those engines kind of have. The smoke, the shadow of the fan coming from above. It all looked very real time to me.
Mm-hmm. I want to believe it's in game. I think earlier this year, someone at 3D Realms mentioned that they were working on a heavily modified Unreal engine. So, and to me, when I first saw it, I immediately thought that looks like an Unreal Engine 3 game. And you know, the Unreal Engine 3 it's a fine graphics engine, and it's supposedly really easy to work with. So, I'd be happy if Duke was using that engine.
It didn't really even look modern to me, though. It almost looked a little bit dated. In the same way that the last trailer looked at for its time, too. And that's cool. I don't care about that as long as the gameplay is great. They can take
over. Yeah, but what's always been great about Duke is like the interactivity with the environments.
Right.
And just how crazy like a real-world Las Vegas environment looks, you know, in the Duke style. But I have in front of me our last Duke cover story, which was December of 1999. And the Duke, which the game render model, which is on the cover, it doesn't look too different from what we saw, and that's a pretty clear, you know, good indication of how far we've come along in terms of graphics technologies.
Or how far we haven't come.
Well, no, the render on the cover.
Well, stuff that's in engine now is looking as good as stuff that used to be pre-rendered, then that is a step up.
Yeah.
I thought you said the opposite of the norm. I thought you said that the cover was a game render.
No, it was a pre-rendered image. And the game and the screenshot we saw from the video we saw yesterday looks pretty good. I'd say even better than the pre-rendered image. Like the veins pop more in Duke. And the guns, the gun in this pre-rendered image just doesn't look that great. But I was reading the articles. I mean, we did another cover story, I guess, when Duke Nukem Forever was originally announced back with the Quake 2 engine. That was in November of 97. And just, you know, it's a great little piece of nostalgia just to see the ambitions they had when they were originally working with the Quake engine and then the Unreal Engine. Like they were saying how Duke wouldn't require a 3D card. It'd be one of their first games with drivable vehicles. The villain would be, Dr. Proton, who is one of the classic Duke villains. So I wonder how much of that is going to make it into the newest iteration.
It's going to be whatever happens. It's going to be a weird day—the day this game finally comes out and gets reviewed. Because it's just going to be, no matter how good the game may or may not be when it finally arrives, it's just going to be impossible to separate the game itself from its quote unquote legend, its infamy, the fact that it took more than ten years to make. It's just, you know, it's going to be impossible for the game to get a fair shake, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of. Done that to itself, absolutely. So,
do you think expectations are like too high now or too low now? Like, have people given up and just want a Duke game, or are expectations like still really high?
I think this trailer has sufficiently lowered expectations, which is the best thing that this property needs right now.
It's a
weird combination of high and low expectations. On the one hand, you've got on paper the expectations are high because you say, well, the game's been in development for 10 years. But you can look at that either way. You can say, well, the fact that it's been in development for 10 years means it had better be good when it comes out. But then the other argument is, well, if it's been in development for 10 years, something must be seriously wrong.
Because that trailer that they released in 2001 was mind-blowing. It was incredible. Had, you know, for a game that was going to be released, you know, in 2001, 2002. And honestly, if that game came out today, but with the updated graphics, I think I'd be pretty happy.
Yeah, it would be awesome. We'll link to that trailer in our PC, on our site.
There's a website that I can't remember where it is right now, but it has a pretty it's a pretty funny list of statistics of all the things that happened in less time than it took for Duke Nukem Forever to come out. Like World War II, you know, was entirely fought. The Beatles got together, released every single record they ever made, and split up in less time than it took to make Duke Nukem Forever. It's pretty scary stuff.
There's no way they can make their money back on this game, which is the sad thing. So,
well, it's all self-funded, so they've been paying themselves to work with the money they made from Duke Nukem 3D and the subsequent like side projects. So the company's three realms.
They made a lot of money off Max Payne as well.
Oh, yeah. Did they develop Max? They didn't develop that. That was a foreign.
No, company. But there was a weird. Published. I can't remember exactly how it worked. But yeah, they then they sold the IP, and right. I think they got a lot of money for it.
They also co-produced Prey, which did all right.
Yeah, we talked to Scott Miller on the Game Theory podcast earlier this year, and he told us that Duke would probably be 3 years out. And this, what we saw yesterday or whatever Wednesday pretty much confirms it.
I don't know. I mean, like a game start to finish these days takes about 3 years.
Yeah.
So if they've already got like as much as they showed there, and they've got stuff in game, they've got a working engine, they've got, you know, models up and running. then that they're a little ways along, you know, at least a year along at that point, right? So 3 years out from now seems like a long time.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, it seems like a big part of the development process, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is first creating technology behind it and forecasting what type of technology is going to be available when the game is supposed to come out. And then the other big part is the content creation. And that's why a lot of developers license engines, because they don't want to deal with the technology, and they just want to do the content, which is what we actually want developers to do. And I think the problem with the Duke Nukem Forever is that they... You know, the time it took to develop the content always took longer than they thought, and by the time they thought they had something, their forecast would be completely off, and the technology would be so outdated that they would have to move to another technology.
Right, and if the game is 3 years out and it looks like it did in that trailer, and it comes out 3 years from now, they're gonna have to start over again.
Yeah, yeah.
I found the list of things that took less time than Duke Nukem Forever. The Beatles formed, released every single one of their albums and broke up. During this time, they also toured the world 7 times. Led Zeppelin released 7 albums and toured the world 27 times. The Wright brothers designed and flew the first airplane. The Theory of General Relativity took less time. And the United States entire program to put a man on the moon, from Kennedy's initial challenge to the actual landing.
Wow.
Oh my god.
That last one's pretty
awesome.
That
one is pretty scary, from, hey, let's put a man on the moon to actually doing it. Taking less time than Duke Nukem Forever is chilling.
And I have no idea if it's going to be still set in Las Vegas. I mean, you already have Rainbow Six Vegas, who's gone a lot, you know, they've been in Las Vegas, and they're doing Rainbow Six Vegas 2 again. And that game, you know, their rendition of Vegas was pretty cool. It was pretty realistic. And that was also using the Unreal 3 engine. So the only thing Duke can bring to the table is just the humor and that style.
The tude.
I'm looking for some alien toilet to park my bricks. Who's first?
Maybe we'll see some Duke at this year's E3, hopefully. And E3 this year is going to happen again. A lot of people were speculating whether it would happen, since last year was such a big departure from the previous years. E3 is going to happen. It's going to be in the middle of July, but it's not going to be in Santa Monica like it was this past year. It's going to be back at the LA Convention Center, which I think everyone's very happy about. But it's not going to be the same E3 as years past, where it's the big, you know, sound stages and the showy lights and the booth babes. It's going to be more like E3 this past year in the meeting rooms, with small presentations, private meetings, still closed to the public by invite only. But I think in terms of media coverage, it's going to help out a lot.
Are they renting out all the halls?
I don't think so. I think it's gonna be one small hall, and what they did this past year is have the hall stuff in this hangar, so they'll have that kind of stuff in one of the halls of the LA Convention Center, but probably run out the suites and the small ballroom areas for meeting rooms for the individual publishers and developers.
Downtown LA has always been a bit of a hassle, but at least it had the benefit of being one centralized location. I didn't go to this new look Santa Monica E3 earlier this year, but from what I heard, it was a bigger hassle.
You did not miss much.
Yeah, I mean, from what I heard, it was a bigger hassle for journalists to have to get bussed around to, you know, 50 different locations.
Right.
You don't want to ask. I mean, Santa Monica is nice, and it's one of the, you know, the classiest places and fanciest places in California, but you don't want to ask. Yeah, you don't want to ask game journalists to walk, you know, 3 miles from one hotel to another for a meeting.
It took us an hour to get from our hotel to the meeting room, or I guess it was going back, which was 7 miles. So yeah. In the traffic there, it was ridiculous. So.
And these guys in f***ing Iraq and Afghanistan complain they have a hard time.
Yeah, but
they want to try doing a real job, like schlepping around on free buses and looking at video games all day.
Yeah. But the show last year was underwhelming too, because nobody announced anything there, because, you know, there was no spectacle, and the whole point of E3 announcements was, you know, oh, everybody's looking this way anyway, let's announce our game, but this year nobody was paying attention.
I remember doing the E3 post-analysis, like after each of the big press conferences every day, and it was just wasn't really very much to latch onto. It was just all very underwhelming.
Hmm. I know some of the publishers were upset that the retailers weren't allowed to be there last year.
It's not they weren't allowed. They didn't come. They were invited. They just didn't show.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Okay.
So, well, I don't know why they would be kind of angry. I mean, retailers, maybe like the head honchos at GameStop, EB, you know, should make appearances. But I never liked the fact that, you know, some Joe Schmo from who works at the GameStop across the street.
That's not what they're talking about at all. They're talking about the buyers for those stores.
Yeah.
They want the people that work at GameStop and EB and all the major retailers and Walmart and everybody else to come and see the games that they're putting out, and so they'll mm-hmm. you know, buy them and stock them on their shelves. That's you know, a big part of what made E3 important, and for those people not to come diminished the significance of the show like radically.
Yeah, well, it's no longer a trade show. It's not like, you know, CES where it's, you know, where you have booths and presentations up in the public, and you're trying to pull viewers.
Well, it was never open to the public,
or, you know, viewers on the grounds.
It was never open to the public. It was always, you know, industry people only.
Was it really? It was so easy for someone.
That was technically true. But anyone who's
you could con your way in, yes.
could get in.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could con your way in, but it was not technically open to the public.
Yeah, I mean, but what does that mean for that other video game show, which we haven't heard much about since E for All? Yeah, who knows? I mean, they did release a press release right after E for All saying it was a huge success, but of course they were going to say it's a huge success. But I don't know if people from the pictures I saw, it was pretty bleak,
sparsely attended. But although most of the pictures we saw were from a Thursday. So you can't really judge it on that, but I mean, all the reports we saw coming out of that was that it was, you know, kind of sparsely attended. It didn't meet their expectations for attendance. I mean, they were charging an arm and a leg to get in there too. It was like $100 for the weekend. So mm-hmm. they drove away a lot of people that, you know, would have liked to go to a show like that just with the asking price. Which in turn made it less valuable for people to buy booth space there to show off their games and stuff. So they announced their intention to do it again, but I haven't heard anything about it since.
Yep. And when we mentioned retailers not going to E3, I mean the buyers not going to E3 to check out the games, and we just got some sales numbers from retailers. NPD released their November sales figures for PC games, and apparently some AAA games didn't do so well. Crysis and UT3 sales have been less than spectacular.
We should talk about NPD a little bit, because they first of all, they don't cover online. They don't even count Walmart, and you know Walmart sells huge numbers of games. So these numbers may be indicative of the overall performance of the game, but it's not.
All games are subject to the same NPD rules, and by comparatively speaking, compared to other NPD numbers, they're pretty poor.
Yeah, so it's not really indicative of how many games they sold.
Right, but what Gary's saying is that comparatively, I mean, if you're looking at two PC games,
right, and like I said, you know, relative to one another. That it may be an indication of how well a game did, but it is not an indication of how many total copies have been sold.
You're saying there weren't literally 30,000 sales of UT3?
No, there were not. There were more than that.
What were the numbers, Norm?
You know, the numbers, unless you're subscribing to NPD, you're not actually allowed to reveal numbers anymore. But the numbers that were leaked online were around 30,000 for the first 2 weeks of UT3's release, and I think just under 100,000 for Crysis.
It was just under 90,000.
80,000.
It was 89,000, wasn't it?
Even factoring in Dan's argument and being very generous towards it, I mean, you could double these numbers, and they'd still be poor.
Selling 200,000 in 2 weeks would be poor.
Call of Duty game.
It wouldn't be Call of Duty or you know Guitar Hero, but would it be poor?
I think there's an argument to be made here that Crysis hurt itself with its system specs, and you're seeing that in the Force
I think so, too. I don't think it's any indication that PC game sales are hurting, and that's what a lot of the articles that came out post this these numbers being leaked was that, you know, PC gaming is dead. I don't think that's the case at all. I think PC gaming, the revenue streams are coming in differently in different places. The retailing is different. It's all, you know, online distribution now. It's all being sold on Amazon and through Steam. What I do think is, for these two games specifically, they were hurt because of poor marketing.
Well, I think that Crysis wasn't hurt so much by its steep system requirements, because it doesn't really have steep system requirements. It has, and it will scale down quite well.
I think Gary means the perception. That,
exactly, the perception of it having high system requirements.
I think to say that Crysis doesn't have steep system requirements is pretty absurd.
No, it isn't.
No,
look at the box.
You can lower it down and just not play it, you know, at the pictures that look at the back of the box settings.
Yeah, but then it's not really Crysis, is it? The game that I was promised is this game that was going to be... Yes, but the whole point of what I was sold a promise of a game that was going to be revolutionary graphically. And in order for it to run on the majority of systems, it's no longer revolutionary graphically. It's just another game.
You think that a system, like a four-year-old system, should be able to play a revolutionary graphics game?
I don't think a four-year-old system. I think an average system.
Well, an average system can play it pretty well.
Well, I disagree.
All right, well, this is something we've talked about at length before. But I think we can all agree that there were some marketing mishaps for these two games. I mean, especially UT3, which is a game, it's been delayed for a long time, but... I didn't see any marketing push for it when the game came out, and the game it's a fine game. They just released a new patch for it that makes it that fixed a lot of the server issues, and they just released a Linux server for it, which is what a lot of the community was waiting for. But even 30,000, if you double that, even 60,000 copies, I don't think they were even selling that game digitally online. They're a little disappointing.
No, I mean, there's room to argue that Crysis was maybe successful. Like I said, if you take into account if you bump those numbers up to include the other retailers and online, you know, the Crysis numbers, maybe not that bad after all. But the UT, no matter how much you fiddle those numbers, those numbers are shit. And I wonder if Team Fortress 2 hurt it a lot.
That's probably very much the case. I mean, there have been a lot of competing games like in that team-based shooter genre lately.
Yeah, Enemy Territory. Also, I don't know how well that sold, but that one also on Steam. And when NPD numbers were released for that, it was at the top, near the top of the list.
Back to your marketing point, though. I mean, wasn't it sort of strange that the way that UT3 came out? Because I feel like 6 months ago, maybe a year ago, there was a great marketing push. We saw these amazing screenshots. People were kind of excited. And then it came out last month, and it was like, I didn't even know it. It was kind of like, shh, we put it on the shelf. Don't tell anybody.
Yeah, and that's not the developer's fault at all. That's, I think, more of an issue with Midway, who's been supporting them for ages. I mean, I remember going back to E3, two, 3 years ago, and there would be this huge UT 2007 poster back when it was called that. Same with promoting Stranglehold and Blacksight. It's not in the caliber as other games.
I mean, just anecdotally, I was fully aware of the fact that UT3 was coming out, and I'm a fan of the previous games. I really, really enjoyed the last one. But I remember looking at those screenshots as it got closer to release and thinking, oh, really? Again? Like, here's the same kind of post-industrial, pseudo-futuristic, extreme, metallic graphics I've seen a million times before. Capture the flag. I just felt like I've done this already. And it really hurt. I think it really hurt itself by the fact that I did actually lose the fact that by the time UT3 finally came out, I was too busy playing Team Fortress 2. That's got class-based gameplay and does have some original things going on. And I just kind of felt like UT3 just felt like a blast from the past that I wasn't interested in comparison.
You know, though, that UT 2003 was sort of the same thing, and then they came back with UT 2K4 that blew that away. I mean, it really made it the game that it should have been. So maybe we'll see.
What was the one with the level on the moving train? Because that was the one that I really...
That was 2K4.
So maybe, okay, yeah, maybe, I liked that.
Maybe the next one will add the gameplay modes that we miss and fix this one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really good point, Jeremy. 2K3 came out, and that was a new engine, but it really was just UT redone. And UT3 is really just UT redone also. Anyway, moving on to a completely another topic that's been popular in the PC Gamer podcast, Uwe Boll. So he has two movies coming out, and one
or not.
Is coming out or not, but Dungeon Siege, which I think we saw the original trailer for that almost a year ago, I want to say.
Yeah. If not more.
Yeah. Is finally coming out, and I want to say that no one's going to watch it.
Dungeon Siege isn't the full name. What is it?
In the name of the king.
Right.
And it has some pretty, you know, big name actors. I think Jason Statham's in it.
Jason Statham, Burt Reynolds, Ray Liotta. John Rhys Davies. Ray Liotta.
It looks like a pretty big budget. Big budget.
This actually appears to be the. I don't want to say legitimate because it just doesn't apply to Uwe Boll, but you know the biggest release that he's got. When I went to the theater, I went to the multiplex recently to see what did I go to see? What was it? Oh, I went to see I Am Legend, and there was like this huge 8-foot stand up, you know, 3-dimensional poster for In the Name of the King, which is the first time I've ever seen anything that looked like that for a Uwe Boll movie. So it may have a bigger marketing budget and be on some more screens than the shit that he usually puts out. It still doesn't look like it's going to be a very good film. It really does look like a kind of a very amateurish Lord of the Rings knockoff.
Well, isn't that what it is?
I'm sure that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. And, you know, I've seen, you know, more marketing for terrible films before, so that doesn't shock me.
Yeah, but you know, what I'm saying is usually these films are just, you know, kind of thrown out in the wilderness to die, where it does seem
wasn't that the whole scam? Like, he was gonna. It was like some tax thing for his investors. Like he would get money to make a film, and he wouldn't care about the quality of the film, but it would just give like tax breaks to the guys who invested, and they'd save money.
Didn't they close that loophole though?
Yeah, there was some German tax law where you could invest in a movie, and even if it lost money, you would still get some benefit out of it. But apparently, they closed that. There was some story a while ago that was no longer the case. So I don't know how he's still making movies.
Yeah, he's doing Far Cry right now.
It's not like there was any story to that game anyway. So
I can't wait to hear that. I can't wait to hear the announcement that he's doing Crysis because I want to see Dan's head explode.
that movie's already been made a dozen times. So I don't know. Yeah, weird.
All right. Well, his other movie, Postal, is actually now indefinitely postponed. And I think this was released on some movie trade blog, but they didn't give a reason for it. But I actually heard that was, I mean, from the early reviews of people who did see that movie, that was his best work yet.
I could see Postal being a college cult film, especially if it's never actually released in theaters.
In a kind of mystery science theater type way, I'm sure, but all the footage that I saw from it just indicated it was just a piece of shit.
Gaz is just particularly foul-mouthed today.
Yeah,
dude. I'm not surprised. As soon as I saw, because I remember seeing they put a clip online of like the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
Which is whole comedy reenactment of the planes crashing into the Twin Towers on 9/11. And I just remember thinking, I don't know how they think they're going to get away with this, and now apparently they haven't.
And one review said that was actually the best part of the film.
Yeah, and I saw that clip at E3 in Santa Monica this year, and you know it in a sick kind of way. There's some humor to it, but you know it is going too far for a theatrical release, audience. So I think they would have a lot of trouble actually selling that.
It's, you know, usually when you spend a certain amount of money on a movie, it's going to get released one way or another. They'll find a way to, it'll probably go straight to DVD or they'll put it on the internet or something. But if you put this at theaters, I'd love to see. I was actually kind of hoping that it would come out in theaters just because I would want to, I was really curious to see what the box office numbers would be like.
The Rotten Tomatoes score?
Oh my God.
-1%. Just a quick couple of news bits. The Weighted Companion Cube is now for sale in the Valve Store. I think they made a couple thousand of those and they sold out in the first 2 days. But now it's back for charity. It's the price has been increased from $30 to $100. But all the proceeds will go to the Penny Arcade Child's Play charity, which is a great charity. So if you really want a Weighted Companion Cube, I think they only have like 50 left. Head over to the Valve Store and pick one up. Also, Peggle is now released on iPod, which I know Dan doesn't give two shits about, but we're excited about, which means there's, you know, for Jeremy and Gary, I guess.
Well, I don't own one of these new iPods, unfortunately, but...
Well, no, I mean, it gives us hope that Peggle will be released for the iPod Touch / iPhone next year.
Oh, wait, so it's not working on the iPhone yet?
No, it's just the type of games, the scroll wheel iPods, which makes sense with that type of control, but with the touchscreen would also work. So maybe next year. And that's all the news we have right now. We're going to jump.
Oh, wait! Really quick. Alone in the Dark has 1% on Rotten Tomatoes.
So somebody liked it.
One fresh review, 113 rotten.
Who gave it the fresh?
It's a statistical error.
Slasher Pool.
Oh yeah, it sounds like a quality site.
They called it Kick-Ass Entertainment.
I think the kick must have got added by accident there or something.
We'll be taking a quick break. When we're back, we'll be joined by Ed Fries, the CEO of Figureprints, who will tell us about how you could get a World of Warcraft figurine. Stay tuned. All right, everyone, welcome back. With us right now is Ed Fries, who is the CEO of Figureprints, a company that we've heard a lot of buzz about online. So, Ed, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, and great to be here.
Cool. Do you want to go ahead and tell us what Figureprints is?
Yeah, well, basically we're taking people's World of Warcraft characters and turning them into statues. So, that's in a nutshell, that's what it is.
Yeah, so it's a website that you can go on and you guys take, it's a completely customizable, World of Warcraft little figurine, I guess, right? That
yeah.
You guys are selling.
You're doing a better job describing it than I am. Maybe I should be more serious.
No, I'm just looking on the website and it looks really fascinating. What caught my eye is that this looks like it's an official, Blizzard licensed product. You want to talk about how you got that license and how, you know, how helpful Blizzard is and how receptive they were to the idea when you brought it up to them?
Sure. I mean, basically I had the idea in the fall of last year and I've been working on it with three other friends ever since. So it's taken more than a year to put all the pieces of the company together, the technology and, but one of the first things I did after I decided that I was going to try to go forward with it is I called Mike Morheim, who runs Blizzard. And Mike and I have run into each other several times over the years, so I felt like I could talk to him about it. And he was very encouraging. I mean, he's kind of a techie guy to begin with, and so the idea of using these 3D rapid prototyping machines to do something new, he was interested in. And I was worried that they may have already given away the rights that we would need, because they were already doing kind of mass produced action figures. But he reassured me that, nobody was doing one of a kind custom figures and that we could get that license if we could put all the technology together to make it happen. Yeah, it really started with a conversation with Blizzard, and they've been very supportive ever since.
Cool. I mean, we've seen customizable action figures before. I know there are some websites where you can, you know, design an action figure that looks like yourself. But I guess the technology for this is pretty new. It's like you mentioned it. It's a prototyping technology. It's not just like you don't have a bin full of arms and legs that you piece together and paint. Every figure is really unique. How does that work?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Every figure is manufactured one of a time, custom. Basically, the technology is called 3D printing, and there's really only one company, one set of printers in the world that can do 3D color printing. And you know, I tell people it's printing, and they think it's like printed on a paper, two dimensional, but it's actually a three dimensional object, right? Like a statue. It's just printed a layer at a time. And I can go into how that works in more detail if you'd like.
I'd love to hear more.
Okay, well, basically, imagine there's a platform and a bar comes across it and it spreads a thin layer of plaster. It's like this white powder. It's kind of like flour. And so it gets spread on it. And then inkjet printheads come out and they print on it just as if it was a sheet of paper. And the ink soaks into the plaster, reacts with it, and it starts to harden. And then that platform that it's sitting on goes down 1/250th of an inch, and then the bar comes back across, spreads the next very, very thin layer of this plaster, and the heads come out and print the next layer. And it just repeats that process over and over again, 250 slices per vertical inch. So our figures can be up to 8 inches tall, so it can take about, you know, 8 to 10 hours to print an entire figure.
What I really like about this, this system, this service is that, you can get a, it seems like you can customize the figure pretty much as much as you want. I went on the website, and I guess what you do is you provide, the gamer provides to you, to the company, the character armored in the way that you want the figure to appear. So you can pick what armor and weapons and stuff he's working with. And then, but then how do you take that and how do you get an accurate representation of the different, you know, because there's thousands of different armor and weapon pieces in the game. Do you have access to Blizzard's original 3D models or what?
We do, but no more access than you would have yourself, and I'll explain why. Basically, all people have to do is go to our website and type in the name of their character, and our servers go out and they talk to the armory, the Blizzard armory, and from that we can find out exactly what gear your character's wearing at that moment. We suck that in, okay, and then to get to more of your question, how do we get the models of the not only the character but all the armor and weapons? We started with a program that was developed by the WoW fan community, something called the WoW Model Viewer, and it's an open source program that's out there, and it goes right into the World of Warcraft installation on your machine. And it sucks out the 3D models right out of the game. You know, I'm an old programmer, so I was able to take that source and modify it for what we need. But basically, we take the models right out of the game. We also take the animations from the game and all the weapons and armor. The model viewer assembles them all together and creates a character just like you would see in the game. Then we export from that into an art format. It ultimately ends up in 3D Studio Max format. And from there, it goes into this custom set of scripts that we've created. When we first started, we tried just to take the output from the model viewer and print it, and we had all kinds of problems. You know, capes would immediately crumble, and we'd get all these weird things connecting between points that weren't there in the actual model. Anyway, we've learned a lot since the early days, but basically, we have this 10,000-line 3D Studio Max script now that goes through, and it does all this stuff. Basically, we learned that we had to make the model watertight. Otherwise, the printer needs to know whether something's supposed to be solid or not, whether it's inside something or outside something. So we deal with those issues. We take things like capes or cloaks, which are super thin, and we extrude them. We have a bunch of work just to deal with hair. Anyway, there's all this custom stuff that runs on in the script. So basically it gets sucked out of the game, all the pieces get put together, gets spit out in 3D Studio Max format, gets sucked into 3D Studio Max, and then this script does all this massaging to make the character printable. Another thing that it does is it up-reses the model quite significantly. Instead of being made out of just a small number of triangular polygons, right, ours are very smooth and flowing. Anyway, it gets spit out of that, and then it's basically in a format that's ready to go into the printer.
Wow. Yeah,
are you concerned that there are some armor or weapon pieces in the game that will not be able to be realized as an actual physical object? Because some of the high-end epic pieces are pretty out there conceptually.
Yeah. You know, every single armor piece or weapon has to be looked at once by an artist. And so they look at each item and they decide what's the best way to make this printable. And most of them, they can do a pretty good interpretation. You know, they obviously pieces can't be floating and they can't be glowing. But an artist looks at it and does their best sort of plaster version of that item. And once that's done, it goes into a database, and it's ready for anyone else who needs, you know, is wearing that particular item or weapon, right?
So how many of the items would you say, percentage-wise, have you looked at that are in World of Warcraft right now?
I know we just finished up all the shoulder pieces and we're into the helms. So we, you know, we've gone through quite a few. We haven't gone through all of them.
And also this is one of those things where you're never really done, because by the time it's going to be kind of like painting the Golden Gate Bridge, by the time that you said, well, okay, we've got all the armor in the game now, Blizzard will have added another 500 pieces.
Yeah. The good thing is, you know, we only have to fix each armor piece or weapon one time. So, and we have a whole system set up. If somebody orders something that we've never seen before, it pops up in a queue for the artist. They know, oh, we need to go and work on this. And then once it's fixed and submitted back in, then that order flows through. So, it's true where new items will change all the time, and that's just part of doing the business.
So because it's such a custom job and you have to have artists looking at so many of these pieces as they are ordered, that's one of the reasons why you have to limit yourself to a set number every month, right?
Yeah, you know, the biggest limiting factor for us is the printers themselves. They, you know, I talked about 250 slices per vertical inch, so it takes about, you know, it can take 10 hours or more to complete a print.
Wow.
And we can do several per batch, but basically we have to run these printers 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we have to have multiple printers just to try and meet the demand. Everything else actually pales in comparison to that. You know, that's our biggest limiting factor for how many orders we can take.
Can we go back to the coloring it for a second? Because that's what intrigues me most. When I first saw the website, I thought for sure they were hand-painted. But the way that you describe them, it's each layer is a different color. But that would sound like 360 degrees around the character, it's the same color on that layer. But that can't be.
No, I didn't describe it very well then. So the printer has four color. The printer has four print heads. They're actually HP 11 print heads. And they come out and they print basically red, green, blue, and a clear binder color that reacts with the powder. So basically, by mixing those colors, you can get any color you want. So it's just like your inkjet printer on your desk can print, you know, millions of colors. So can this. They're really better than they could possibly be if they were hand painted, because we take these what are already pretty high resolution textures out of the game, and then we up-res them even more, and we sharpen them, and then we apply them onto these figures. So I think an artist would have a really hard time painting in the level of detail that we get. They certainly couldn't do it for $100.
Yeah, so every dot, like every pixel, so to speak, on the exterior of the model could theoretically be a different color, right?
They absolutely can be. The resolution is 600 dots per inch in the two horizontal dimensions and 250 dots per inch in the vertical dimension. So it's very, very high resolution. And that also applies to the physical characteristics of the object. So, you know, thin pieces of hair or points, sharp points of daggers, things like that.
What's the interest been like so far? I think I read something somewhere, and I'm not sure if this was apocryphal or not, that you've already received so many orders that you're already having to do kind of a lottery where if you want one and you have your $100, you're still going to be pretty lucky if you manage to get one any time in the near future.
Yeah, unfortunately it's not apocryphal. It's true. We knew that we knew going in that it was likely we'd have to limit how many orders we took, and we spent a lot of time talking with Blizzard about what would be the fairest way to do it, and we decided to give people a certain amount of time to sign up, and then basically hold a lottery, and the people who win get a chance to be our first customers. The demand, Gary, has just been incredibly overwhelming. We thought we might maybe do 10,000 prints in our first year, and we've had in the first 10 days, we're just about to pass 50,000 people signed up for the first
one. Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah. So is this a solution to get more printers? I mean, I imagine those things were pretty costly, too. Do you guys actually own the printers, or?
Yeah, we own a set of the printers right now. The printers cost about $50,000 each, so they are costly machines. We are exploring a bunch of different ways that we could ramp up our production, either by expanding the number of printers that we own or using printers that other people own. But, you know, quality is super important to me. It's super important to Blizzard. You know, these things are, there are stages in the process where humans are always involved. So I talked to you about the automated part of it, but an artist always looks at the finished model before it's sent to the printer and makes little tweaks to make sure it looks the best it can. It goes and it gets printed, and the actual process of getting the prints out of the printer is very much of a manual process, and I could go into that if you want. But so, you know, part of it is we need to build up our own skills and experience too, and not just have this entire, you know, huge row of printers and not be able to deal with it.
It's a really fantastic idea. The only downside I can come up with as a player, and I had thought about this before, is that, you know, you're always kind of upgrading your armor and your weapons in the game, and your character is always looking better. And it's cool to have a snapshot in time of your character at a certain level. But let's say I order a print from you now for my level 70 mage, and then Wrath of the Lich King comes out 6 months from now, my character looks much better, and my character that's sitting here on my desk is wearing armor that I wouldn't be seen dead in the game. I'm going to have to go and order an all new character from you. Maybe that's your evil plan all along. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you can look at that as a good thing or a bad thing. I liked my gnome better at 60 than 70, actually. So his Bloodfang hood was one of his coolest things. I was sad when I got some cheap green and level 70 that was more powerful, but not nearly as cool looking. So, I think the snapshot in time thing that you brought up is exactly right. I think people are going to pick certain times that are meaningful for them, certain sets of gear that are meaningful for them, and those are the kinds of things they're going to want to print.
Are you expecting any orders for people just stripping off their characters, like someone just wants a naked blood elf for, you know, whatever perverted reason they may want it?
Yeah, somebody did a webcomic with that the other day, which was pretty funny. We have had one request to our support line to support nude textures, which apparently exist, but those we will not be adding support for. Other unusual requests, we've had two requests now for couples who are getting married and want them as wedding cake toppers. And so we're actually rushing a couple prints through for some people who are getting married. And they look great. Cool. In the wedding dress and the tuxedo from the game, they look really good.
So the models, they come with a base, right? And you have the player's name on that?
That's
also
correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can choose among a bunch of different bases. That's part of the customization process. And different races have different bases. So, you know, I play a gnome, so I make sure the gnomes don't get shortchanged. So the gnomes have some big, cool bases they get to stand
on. There's no discount for gnomes, is there?
No discount for gnomes. But gnomes get to stand on the Ironforge anvil if they want, and several other things that aren't available to the those taller.
Just something to make them look a little less diminutive in the case, you mean?
Yeah, well, like I said, you know, I play a gnome, so I try to watch out for them.
I'm just kind of curious what the, you know, we've asked a lot about the process. I'm just kind of curious about what the final quality is like. I mean, how does it compare to like a sideshow collectible or, you know, one of these kind of hand, you know, obviously it's not hand painted, but I'm just curious to know, because it is a new process, what the ultimate result, how it compares to something that you might hand paint, because it's a little hard to tell from the images we've seen on the web.
Yeah, I wish I could be sitting there with you and show them to you, because, I mean, all modesty aside, they look really impressive. They, you know, they come in this glass dome, and they look beautiful. I've been doing a beta test for a while with my guild, Liquid Courage, from the Scenario server, and everyone who has received one has just gone on the guild website and raved about, you know, how happy they are with it and how excited they are about how it looks. It is different than a plaster material. You know, some of those action figures, they can do some things like they'll have a metallic paint, maybe. We can't do something that's really shiny, metallic looking. And we can't do clear. There is something clear. You know, I guess plaster is the best way I could describe them. You know, colored plaster. Are they
tough to ship? Because you've got a plaster figurine in a glass case. Is it something that you're going to have to put like an extra $20 worth of packing peanuts in there just to get them out to people?
It's definitely something we're working on. We've definitely had some break in shipping, and when they do, we just make a new one and we ship it again. We're experimenting with different shipping companies. We're experimenting with different packing material. We've been in what they call the Drop and Vibe Lab at Dell, because Dell is one of our partners in this, and they've helped us with some of our shipping issues. But yeah, the biggest problem we have is they tend to snap at the ankles if they get whacked really hard in shipping. So that's something we're working on.
Are you anticipating supply and demand to kind of level out at some point where, you know, I'll be able to go on the website and pretty much get one right away?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could do that. I wish I could do that right now, but I can't. And so then the two choices are to create a really long line where if you went on now, you'd know for a fact you wouldn't get one for 2 years, you know, or something. Or to give everybody, you know, a chance that they could be the next people to order. And, you know, to me that fits more with sort of the feeling in the game, you know, that there's always a chance you're going to win. Even if you're, you know, go on some raid, maybe you get lucky and the loot roll will come up for you.
If I were you, I'd just give people the option to pay a lot more money to just jump the queue. Because you know there are people crazy enough out there to do it.
Yeah, yeah. We talked about a lot of things like that. And, you know, we talked about charging more. I think that $100 is the fair price for what you get, and I'm in this for the long term. You know, I'm a fan of the game, and I want the people who get it to be happy. And so, you know, and I think it fits with Blizzard's philosophy too. Blizzard isn't really a big fan of gold farmers, gold sellers, and so, you know, people getting.
Yeah, I was going to say, the thing that I like about it is it's pretty much money. It's the only tough to get product that is immune to eBay flippers. I kind of like that.
Is it though? Yeah. I mean, I'm concerned that there will be some email addresses that win the lottery and then basically get sold off to the highest bidder. Is that
possible? Yeah, I guess they could do that, huh?
Could you do that, Ed?
Well, a couple things. We're going to be trying to prevent that from happening, just like Blizzard tries to prevent people from auctioning off in-game items. There are some things that we haven't put in place yet that we could put in place about how we allocate out the winners that would make it a lot harder for people to sell them on eBay. So we're gonna see how bad a problem it is before we make people's life hard as part of the registration sign-up process.
It will be interesting to see what the market value of these things is on eBay.
Yeah, you know, I'm curious, but at the same time, you know, I like the $100 price, and I figure that my job is to, you know, figure out the production issues and try and ramp up and get it to as many people as possible and as high a quality as possible.
For sure.
So that's what I'm going to be working on.
But basically, you're expecting to just laugh all the way to the bank on this one, aren't you? Let's be honest.
Well, I mean, we just talked about ways we could make more money if that was really our goal. I mean, you know, we're fans of the game, and we're going to try to make something that people really want and think is cool.
Would it have been possible, by the way, to have done this without the partnership with Blizzard, aside from having access to their data? If someone were to try to do this unofficially without signing a licensing agreement with Blizzard, would you have gotten stamped down for that? I mean, was the formal agreement with Blizzard necessary for something like this?
Well, I mean, you know, I come from the game business, so that never even crossed my mind. I mean, it's clearly their intellectual property, and I respect that, and I think that they should share in the success of it. And they've also been a great partner. I mean, we had about 15,000 people signed up. You know, we went live a week, and you know, about 10 days ago, right? A week ago Tuesday. And in the first week, we had about 15,000 people sign up. And then on this Tuesday, we went up live on the World of Warcraft website and in the launcher, in-game launcher, and we went from 15,000 to 50,000. So, you know, it's not just about being nice to Blizzard. I mean, the fact that we're a partner with them, what they're bringing back to us is a huge number of customers.
Did you have to do a big show and tell to convince them that this is something they would want to get involved with? Because I know how they're so picky about what they'll put their name on in terms of, you know, demanding that it be a top quality thing. Or was it just a case of, did you just have a figure and just put it on the table and say, look, this is what we're going to do? And they go, oh, cool.
Yeah. Somewhere in between, but more toward the first than the second. They, you know, I had that initial conversation with Mike Morheim, and he encouraged me to go forward. We had a meeting maybe a couple months later where we showed our first things, and there were things about him that they liked, and they encouraged us to go forward, but there were things that they didn't like. And basically we got to a point where we had to decide to buy our first printer. We had other people printing them for us up till then. And so we kind of had to take a risk and buy our first printer because we really needed hands-on experience cranking out our own prints and playing around with things like color. That was one of the early models we did where they almost looked gray. The color was so bad. And it was something that Blizzard, that was obviously very important. Blizzard was very important to us too. So, you know, we had subsequent meetings with them where we showed that we had, you know, solved the color problems and that we could deal with, you know, a lot of the other issues that you've brought up in this podcast. And, you know, they've been very cool in that they've been very excited about it from the very beginning. You know, and, very encouraging, and, but also like you would expect, they're very picky about what their stuff looks like, and they should be. And, I feel really good about the relationship. It's been good from my point of view.
You have any plans, put up like a community site where people can show off their figures? I mean, you know, some people might not, you know, be lucky enough to win a chance to buy the figure, but I like looking at the pictures anyway.
Yeah, it's funny. We were just talking about that because some of my guildmates were starting to post pictures of their characters, and we were talking about what we could do with them. And maybe so, what we may do is we may have a gallery up there now where you can see the shots that we took. We may have like a link off that to a user created gallery where we can worry less about the quality of the photos and more just say, hey, here's pictures that people took.
Yeah,
I tell you
awesome.
Though, I have yet to see a picture that does it justice, that is like holding them in your hand. I mean, they're just really, really cool. The complexity, the detail, the color, everything.
Sweet. Well, later on in the show, we're going to let you know how you can get a chance to win one of these. Ed's been generous enough to provide one for one of our listeners.
I'd like to point out it's a gift from me and Blizzard both.
Oh, and Blizzard, thank you to Blizzard. Yep. We also before this interview, we looked on your Wikipedia page and we noticed that aside from fingerprints, you're also involved with a company called Emotive Systems. Wikipedia says they're working on building an EEG-based game controller. Now, for listeners who don't know, EEG is it's like brainwaves, right? And that's something that on the podcast we're very fascinated with, and we've had some heated debates about whether mind-controlling games is possible. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. It's a company out of Australia. I've been associated with them for a couple of years. The chief product officer there is a guy named Randy Breen. And, Randy, has been around the game business for our boy forever. 20 years, maybe. He created the Road Rash series at Electronic Arts. He ran LucasArts game business for a long time. So this is a guy who really, he really gets gaming, gets what makes games fun. They're working on a really cool product. I mean, ask me some questions. I'll tell you more about it.
Well, I mean, what's the eventual goal? Are we going to be able to sit in front of our computers and, think about firing a gun and that's going to work?
Yeah. That's probably not the best application for it. The latency on the mind control kind of application is pretty high. It's something on the order of half a second. So using it as a replacement for direct control, it isn't a very good trade-off. It is.
I don't know. It sounds pretty much like playing online to me.
Yeah, it is. What's interesting for them, they basically are. Divide things up into three categories. One is that they can do very good facial recognition, and it's sort of a side effect of their technology. So the muscle the electrical impulses to the muscles on your face come in sort of as noise, but they can collect and interpret that noise and know what's going on. So they know if you blink or smile or wink or anything like that. That's sort of the first level of what they can do. The second level is conscious control, what we were just talking about. And, you know, so to imagine a fireball and then having a fireball happen. They do a lot of kind of manipulation of objects with their mind, you know, like lifting something and spinning it, that kind of thing. At GDC last year, they had a game where you were kind of psychically trying to lift an opponent up off this platform and then throw them off this cliff, and the other guy's trying to do the same thing to you. And then the third thing is probably the most interesting thing. It's more the unconscious. Unconscious monitoring of your various states, your kind of emotional states. So, and that's really the core of what the company is doing. And so they can tell, for example, how excited you are in the situation that you're in, or how frustrated you are, or several other kind of emotional responses. That's sort of where that name emotive comes from. And using that then as feedback back to even to the game designer about, you know, so while the game is running, it can sort of monitor how you're feeling and maybe react to how you're feeling. You know, that's a really interesting idea, right?
If the game was able to sense that you were getting frustrated, it could adjust the difficulty level or something like that to make it easier on you. Is that what
exactly
you're talking about? Right.
Exactly. That would be a simple example. Yeah. They're very far along in development. They showed some stuff at GDC last year. They're working with several high-profile game developers. I'm sure they're going to have a higher profile presence at this year's Game Developers Conference. And, you know, it's getting pretty close to being a product that they can bring to market.
Are you thinking sometime next year? Is it possible?
It's possible. I'll just say that.
Sweet. We'll be looking forward to seeing that stuff at GDC. Well, that's pretty much all the time we have. Ed, thanks so much for joining us today. Again, the website is figureprints.com. Congratulations to all the people who entered and got a chance to buy one of those. They look really cool. Ed, thanks again.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. This was fun.
Thanks a lot again to Ed Fries. So if you want to win a free Figureprints courtesy of Figureprints and Blizzard, what we're going to have you do is write up a 150-word World of Warcraft fan fiction. It can be about anything, preferably funny, and send it over to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. We're going to give you 2 weeks to do this, so you have until the new year. But over the holidays, write up your 150-word story, send it over. The rules are, you know, you must be 18 years or older to win, and you must be a U.S. resident. We're really sorry to all the World of Warcraft fans who are Canadians.
Hold on.
You're going to read the best one. We're going to read the best ones out on the podcast, right?
We will read the best ones out on the podcast. Send it to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com.
And make sure that the subject line is Figureprints. That's one word.
Figureprints. That's right. Figureprints. We'll have the official rules on our podcast website. So it's end of the year. It's our last podcast. We won't be back till the new year, but, to end of the year, you guys want to talk about your favorite games of 2007 and what you're looking forward to in 2008?
Dan? We pick one game of the year?
Yeah, pick the one game that you think is your personal favorite game of 2007. You can have two if you really want.
All right.
A personal favorite? One I've definitely spent the most time with has got to be Supreme Commander and or Forged Alliance. I've spent a lot of time on those. I've had a lot of fun playing it.
And what are you looking forward to next year?
Next year, definitely Spore. What am I forgetting? Oh, StarCraft II, of course.
All right.
Fallout 3.
Okay. Jeremy?
My favorite game of the year, you know, the thing I'm probably going to end up going back to the most is Portal, in years to come, because it kind of has that timeless quality. But my game of the year is still Call of Duty 4. huge props for that single player campaign.
You know, I just finished that last night.
I don't want to hear about it.
It's fun. I had fun. Is it game of the year? Not by a long shot.
It's a 91% game.
Well, so is Supreme Commander, so.
Okay, what are you looking forward to next year, Jeremy?
You know, I know so little about what's coming up this year. It feels different than 2007 to me, but, you know, obviously I'd go with Spore, because it just seems like it's got the most excitement behind it. I can't wait to see what it's all about.
Mm. Gary?
My games of the year would be Portal and Team Fortress 2. I mean, I'll just say Orange Box, because I want to be able to use Portal and Team Fortress 2 together as one vote, because, I mean, both those games were fantastic. And I agree with Jeremy. Call of Duty 4 was one of the most amazing single player first person shooters I've ever played. You know what, Dan? I didn't shit all over your votes.
He feels insecure, Gary.
Yeah, apparently so. Portal, Orange Box. Sorry, Portal, Team Fortress 2, and Call of Duty 4, undoubtedly. And then for 2008, StarCraft 2 would be number one by a mile. I mean, I don't think I'll even need another game next year once that comes out. Left 4 Dead. And if I can find a new guild by the time it comes out, Wrath of the Lich King.
Hmm. And for me, I think I always look at the game that I spent the most time with, and the game that whenever I want to play, I can just I default to, and it's got to be Team Fortress 2. I think BioShock was one of the most amazing single player experiences I've had in a long time, but in terms of just what 2007 will stand for in my head, it's going to be Team Fortress. The year Team Fortress 2 came out. So that, and the next year, I guess Left 4 Dead, I'm more excited for that than Spore. But definitely Spore is on that list somewhere. So that does it for us. Oh, and a quick shout out to Jens Pulver, who won his fight. We didn't mention it last week. But he beat the other guy in like 24 seconds. And probably wore the PC Gamer logo and the Call of Duty 4 logo on as his T-shirt for the fight. So congratulations to him, and we'll see everyone next year. Peggle on iPods.
You have to have a Mac.
You don't need the Mac. Why would you need a Mac?
Whatever.
Yeah, I think so. I heard some knocking, clicking while we were just discussing. I don't know what that was.
I heard that too.
All right, as long as it doesn't.
It sounded like a pen, maybe.
All right, here we go.
Oh, that was me with a. I had a folding knife here.
Okay.
What do you do with the knife?
I use it to cut things.
Welcome, one and all. This is Norm the Intern. I'm hosting this week. Joining me today, or should I do our host this, or our guest this week?
Oh, you should.
Usually we do that at the top of the show.
Yeah,
I'll redo it then. Hello, this is Norm the Intern. I'm the host today for today. What
the hell?
Clear. Norm doesn't get to make fun of me anymore.
Shut the f*** up.
I hope you did better than this at your Beauty and the Geek audition.
No.
Or maybe that was a plus. I don't know.
Yeah, that would be a plus.
Now, here's a question I've always had that I've never bothered to Google, but maybe one of you guys will know. What is the big deal about a Linux server? Who cares about Linux? And why not just run the server on Windows?
I think it's stability and how much processing power you need. Linux and how much control you have over the server. I don't know. I'm just bluffing. When we come back, we'll be joined by Jeffries, who is... or
no, Jeffries. Wait, stop.
Wait,
Ed Fries.
Ed Fries.
Jeffries?
Hold on. I was looking at another website. So.
Norm just checked out early for 2007. He's just got like the annual senioritis that you get at the end of the year.
Yeah. We'll be back in January 3rd. If you have any questions, send them to PCGamerPodcasts@gmail.com or you can. I don't know what else you can do. I'm out of it.
Have a just happy New Year, everybody.